Today is Thursday, November 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Ethiopia's prime minister declares a state of emergency as rebel forces from Tigray advance toward the capital.
Ethiopia will prosper. Ethiopia will forever exist with her honor by defeating all who test her throughout the blood and bones of her children.
U.S. Republicans score big wins, including the governorship in Virginia.
All righty, Virginia, we won this thing!
And congressional Democrats say they're making big progress on a spending package backed by President Biden. We'll have these stories and more next. The State Department says the U.S. Special Envoy for the Horn of Africa, Jeffrey Feltman, will travel to Ethiopia Thursday and Friday. This comes after the government in Addis Ababa declared a state of emergency and rebel forces from the northern Tigray region began moving toward the capital. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
On Thursday, Ethiopia marks the one-year anniversary of brutal fighting between government forces aligned with Eritrean forces and rebels in the northern Tigray region. Now, rebel forces say they are advancing on the capital, Addis Ababa, and that it could fall within months or even weeks. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed vowed that his government will prevail.
Ethiopia will not collapse. Ethiopia will prosper. Ethiopia will forever exist with her honor by defeating all who test her throughout the blood and bones of her children.
As residents of the capital read in their newspapers, the Ethiopian government declared a state of emergency and called on residents to defend their neighborhood if rebels arrive in the capital. The president of the Tigray region, Debretsion Gebremichael, blamed the Ethiopian government and their allies for the suffering.
The warmongers decided to continue with the war, and we entered into this war because the only option we had is to destroy our enemies by force.
State Department spokesperson Ned Price called on all the warring parties to end the fighting and protect the lives and rights of citizens. He said the State Department has now updated the travel advisory for Ethiopia to level 4.
What that means is we are advising U.S. citizens do not travel to Ethiopia. We are recommending that U.S. citizens in Ethiopia consider departing now using commercial options that remain available.
The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, said the year-long conflict was marked by extreme brutality.
We have reasonable grounds to believe that during this period, all parties to the Tigray conflict have committed violations of international human rights, humanitarian, and refugee law. Some of these may amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity. Civilians in Tigray have been subjected to brutal violence and suffering.
A report by the UN Human Rights Office with the government-created Ethiopian Human Rights Commission found that sexual violence has been rampant in the conflict, detailing reports of gang rapes by various parties against women and girls, but also against men and boys. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
State Department spokesperson Ned Price also said Wednesday that the continued fighting only prolongs the humanitarian crisis that is affecting far too many people in Ethiopia today. All parties must stop military operations and begin ceasefire negotiations without preconditions. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has again called on citizens to rise up and bury the Tigray forces in a Facebook post that was later removed. Facebook has faced widespread criticism for failing to do more to stop its platform from being used to incite violence. During Wednesday's State Department briefing, Price also commented on last weekend's mass protest in Sudan following the military takeover there. He said, "We saw a remarkable demonstration of the aspirations of the Sudanese people." Price said the protesters made clear that Sudan's democratic transition must continue, adding, "We join them." In the U.S. Congress, members of the Democratic Party say they're making good progress on a spending package that includes paid leave, tax breaks, and immigration provisions. President Joe Biden backs the legislation, as we hear from AP correspondent Mike Gracia.
After a jolting loss in the Virginia gubernatorial election Tuesday night, House Democrats revived key priorities in President Joe Biden's $1.75 trillion social services and environmental bill Wednesday, a new paid family leave program, a state and local tax break, and immigrant work permits were added to the package as Democrats scrambled to deliver on the long-delayed package. The House Rules Committee convened late Wednesday to consider the updated text of the over 2,100-page package. Initial House votes are possible as soon as today. Mike Gracia, Washington.
U.S. Republicans won big Tuesday in an off-year election, winning the governorship in the state of Virginia and making a surprisingly strong showing in New Jersey's governor's race. As VOA's Carolyn Presutti reports, some analysts see the results as a warning for both parties ahead of next year's midterm elections, when Americans will vote for all the seats in the U.S. House of Representatives and a third of the Senate.
Two unwelcome surprises for Democrats. Republicans won the governor's race in Virginia for the first time in a decade with a candidate who has never held public office. Glenn Youngkin is Virginia's governor-elect.
All righty, Virginia, we won this thing!
And in New Jersey, Democratic Governor Phil Murphy won re-election, but in a much closer race that wasn't decided until Wednesday night.
Thank you, New Jersey! Thank you for putting your trust in our team for another 4 years.
In Virginia, Democratic gubernatorial candidate Terry McAuliffe tried to tie Youngkin to former President Donald Trump. He hoped to appeal to voters in a state that Democrat Joe Biden won by 10 points in the presidential contest. Republicans, meanwhile, focused on so-called kitchen table issues like taxes, education, and crime. Virginia's election results are a warning signal for Democrats, says Mark Rozelle of George Mason University via Skype.
The public perception right now is that the Democrats who are in control of Washington can't get things done that they said they were going to do, and the Democratic brand is suffering.
Specifically, President Biden's Build Back Better Act. It would massively expand America's social safety net and combat climate change at a cost of $1.75 trillion. Here's what Biden said about it as Americans voted Tuesday.
It's going to lower inflation, raise wages, increase competition, create 2 million jobs a year.
But the bill remains stalled in Congress as progressive and moderate Democrats can't agree on its many provisions. Republicans seized on Tuesday's election results as evidence that Americans are rebelling against the plan. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell.
Democrats should listen to the voters. Drop this reckless taxing and spending spree and stop trying to ram through a socialist transformation that the American people never asked for.
But Democrats insist they will deliver on their promises to voters, including Build Back Better. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer.
The challenges American families and workers are facing today are enormous. And President Biden's agenda is the remedy to much of their hardships. It's just what the American people want and what they need.
Off-year elections are often perilous for the political party that controls Washington. Democrats have thin House and Senate majorities to defend in next year's midterm elections, which typically bring gains for the opposition party. Tuesday's results in Virginia added to Democrats' gloom and Republicans' budding optimism heading into 2022. Carolyn Presutti, VOA News.
Lebanese residents are facing unprecedented poverty brought on by corruption, the COVID-19 pandemic, and last year's devastating bombing in the capital, Beirut, which left more than 200 people dead. Reporter George Eade tells me that conditions in the country have deteriorated over the past few months.
People are unable to withdraw their money from the banks. One of the main reasons for the collapse of the country's economy is 30-year-long corruption scheme that has been going on. Add to that the COVID-19 situation, which brought the businesses down to their knees, and then the lack of good governance because we had a full year without a government. And to add to that crisis, we had a very huge a blast at the port of Beirut in 2020. Let's say in August 4th, 2020, there was a huge blast. The capital, Beirut, was devastated. We're talking here about 100,000 homes were, shuttered, either partially or completely destroyed. 200 people were killed. And as you can imagine, when the capital is hit, that adds more to an ongoing economic crisis.
Let's take those things one by one. I remember the huge, horrible blast there in 2020 and the 200 people killed. Did the government ever find out what caused that, and did they try to cover the costs of the damage done, and did that help at all?
When it comes to the 4th of August blast, we have an ongoing investigation and a court that is looking into the matter. However, political interventions have seen it stall, and there has not been a certain clear decision on who is behind this blast. And so we are awaiting still the judge's decision by the end of this year. And on the other side, the government has tried to pay the people to repair their homes. However, the efforts were minimal, and the money paid has already had lost its value because the Lebanese pound had lost 90% of its value. So half of the capital is still devastated. We had a lot of NGOs that intervened, a lot of foreign aids that intervened to assist people rebuild partially or fully their homes. And we are witnessing now NGOs even offering food and some form of donation to families that are homeless now or moved out of their homes into temporary shelters.
How would you describe the situation? You probably had homeless people before, but in numbers, in terms of before the blast, before COVID, those years and those day-to-day situation compared to now with the number of homeless people that you have.
Well, we can say that it is an unprecedented situation on all levels. I mean, you must imagine a capital of a country that is devastated, homes shuttered, the whole population there, if not 90% of the population, has been hit somehow. Some people lost their homes, some people their cars. It is rare to find someone who was untouched by this colossal explosion. So, yes, it was very hard to manage. Some people were moving into temporary homes with their families. Others were taking shelter in hotels. And some of them even remained in their homes in difficult circumstances. And when I mean difficult circumstances, I mean rainy weather and in summer, extremely hot temperatures. So unfortunately, this has caused a big humanitarian crisis. And until now, there has not been a final solution to these people.
That is Beirut-based reporter George Eade speaking to me on Wednesday. And Lebanon finds itself in another crisis, which began last week when Saudi Arabia gave Lebanon's ambassador 48 hours to leave the country, recalled its envoy from Beirut, and suspended all imports from Lebanon. The Saudi Foreign Ministry said the measures were taken after what it called insulting remarks made by a Lebanese minister on the Yemen war, and also because of the influence the Iran-backed Hezbollah group has had on Lebanon's government. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Carol Van Dam. The United Kingdom has granted conditional permission for the use of a coronavirus antiviral medication. The pill, made by pharmaceutical company Merck, is the first shown to successfully treat COVID-19. Britain is the first country to authorize the treatment. It's not immediately clear how soon the pill will be available. The drug is supposed to be taken by people with mild to moderate symptoms at home twice a day for 5 days. An antiviral that reduces symptoms and hastens recovery could ease caseloads on hospitals and help curb outbreaks in poorer countries around the world. Several major countries that use coal are pledging for the first time to phase out their use of the major polluter or do it more quickly than they pledged in the past. Other nations announced commitments on the sidelines of the UN climate conference in Glasgow to end investment in new coal-fired power plants. The UK said Wednesday that those committing to new or earlier deadlines for ending their use of coal include Poland, Ukraine, Vietnam, and Chile. Many major economies, including the United States, China, and India, have set no formal deadlines for stopping their use of coal. Nuclear power is a main sticking point as negotiators make plans for the world's future energy strategy at the climate talks. Critics bemoan its high cost, the damage caused by some nuclear accidents, and the issue of what to do with its radioactive waste. But pro-nuclear groups argue that it is safer on average compared with many other energy sources. They also say nuclear power is low emission and that it's the world's best hope to keep climate change under control. U.S. authorities say they expect to see arrests and criminal charges linked to ransomware over the next few weeks. Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco did not elaborate, but she told the Associated Press, in the days and weeks to come, you're going to see more arrests and law enforcement operations. Monaco made the comments as the U.S. continues to cope with what she calls a steady drumbeat of attacks. Last summer, President Biden admonished Russian President Vladimir Putin after a rash of lucrative attacks that were found to be linked to Russian-based hacking gangs.
This is Science in a Minute.
A group of scientists say they have detected water and carbon monoxide molecules in what is described as the most massive galaxy in the ancient universe. They say their discovery marks the most distant detection of H2O in a star-forming galaxy and that the newly detected molecules also play an important role in the creation of life as we know it. The galaxy is actually comprised of a large and a smaller galaxy, which may merge in the future, and is located nearly 12.88 billion light-years from Earth. This means the scientists were observing the galaxy as it was 12.88 billion years ago, just about 780 million years after the Big Bang. The researchers using the Atacama Large Millimeter Submillimeter Array in Chile made their findings after conducting an ultra-high resolution and detailed study of the galaxy's molecular gas. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The Tour du Faso, a 10-day bicycle race through the conflict-stricken West African country of Burkina Faso, began in the southern city of Banfora on October 29th. One Burkinabe rider hopes to build on his Summer Olympics performance and secure victory despite security concerns. Reporter Henry Wilkins follows the race north from Lumbila.
Paul Dumont is one of 80 cyclists taking part in this year's Tour de Faso, Burkina Faso's answer to the world-famous Tour de France bicycle race. Since October 29th, cyclists have pedalled their way across the country with a new stage each day. Dumont is back from the Olympics in Tokyo and hopes to improve on his performance in his home country. He says breaking into cycling was tough, but at just 22, it has already taken him all over the world, from Japan to Switzerland. He says cycling, whether in Burkina Faso or the rest of the world, is a sport that is difficult to get into because you need a machine, and those machines are relatively expensive. He says you have to be lucky enough to already have a bike or to know someone who can lend one to you to get started. Dumont says the Cycling Federation in Burkina Faso helped him with a road racing bike after he showed potential. But you need a good bike to get to that level in the first place. Despite difficulties with access, the sport of cycling is becoming more popular in Africa, and the Union Cycliste International's annual Africa Tour takes in 11 countries, including Burkina Faso. Burkina Faso is in the midst of a six-year conflict involving terror groups linked to the Islamic State group, Al-Qaeda, and local bandits, and security has deteriorated in recent months. The organisers and participants at this year's event, however, were pushing ahead, and the atmosphere was festive. When asked about security, Laurent Bezot of Union Cycliste International, one of the organisers, said it was a concern.
Yeah, sure. It's one of the big difficulties for us, because of course when we have, for example, European countries, we are not all the time sure, but We have a big organization. We have the military with us. We have the police with us.
Contenders from Europe, such as Johan Betten, say they're not worried about security.
Oh, I don't feel unsafe at all. I think everyone is very friendly, and I haven't felt unsafe at all. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here.
Local riders say they're enjoying the cosmopolitan nature of the event, but have their eyes on the prize. Burkinabe cyclist W. Mathias Sorgo says he's thankful to the foreigners who came, and he also thanks the cyclists, the runners from Burkina Faso. May God give us the yellow jersey, he adds. Meanwhile, De Mont has already placed in the top 10 in the first two stages of the Tour de Faso, which will reach its conclusion on Sunday. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Lombilla, Burkina Faso.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam. The Galapagos Islands off the Pacific coast of Ecuador teem with marine life, including endangered species. However, overfishing by China's fleet threatens the islands. Jamie Moreno has this report.
Walter Borbor lives on the Galapagos Islands. A fourth-generation fisherman, he sees his livelihood threatened by hundreds of Chinese ships casting for squid near Ecuador's Galapagos Marine Reserve.
They catch tons of fish on those vessels. Large ships carry countless species, and this is large-scale exploitation. Fishing with this many ships is going to cause an irreparable impact. Some endangered species will come extinct.
Scientists studying evolution and the impact of climate change value the isolated Galapagos Islands. Home to some 3,500 species, the islands almost 1,000 miles from South America's Pacific coast are a UNESCO Biosphere Reserve. But just beyond the boundaries of the reserve, Chinese fishing fleets are waiting.
As no one knows how much they catch, as there are no observers on board, there is no independent external audit, there is no data. Nobody knows what impact this has or whether it should be restricted or, if it isn't, what will happen.
China accounts for more than a third of global fish consumption. With waters overfishing Asia and demand rising, China's government-subsidized fleet, the world's largest, is now fishing off Latin America, Africa, and even Hawaii.
They have already finished with their resources in their seas, and they are cleaning out the rest of the ocean. They are in international waters, and they are legally fishing.
Last year, from July 13 to August 13, researchers spotted nearly 300 Chinese vessels near the Galapagos Reserve, going after squid, essential food for fur seals and scallop hammerhead sharks. Both are endangered species, endemic to the Galapagos. In 2017, authorities caught a Chinese vessel inside the reserve. More than 7,500 death sharks filled its hull. Most were hammerheads, but there were endangered silky, treasure, and mako sharks too, all valued for Chinese medicinal and culinary use. China's ambassador to Ecuador, Chen Guoyu, told VOA that his government is acting to protect endangered species.
The Chinese government strictly prohibits all boats from fishing for protected and endangered marine species, and it has zero tolerance policy for undeclared illegal operations by fishing boats.
Ecuador has expressed concern about the fleet, but believe international organizations should handle this issue.
Ecuador has worked on this topic and raised its concern. We have to work within and with the instruments that international law and current international agencies grant us.
Borbor worries the scale of Chinese fishing will affect the ocean food chain and the supply of fish resources.
On the mainland, for the past two decades, there haven't been enough fish close to shore for the artisanal fishers to catch. I don't want the same thing to happen here in two decades.
Escenario de donde ya no haya que pescar.
Jaime Moreno, VOA News, Galapagos Islands.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of producer Nadia Taha and the entire production team, thank you so much for joining us today. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington.